Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to my Show Me the Science podcast. Now, this week, a request. Now, please, anything you want me to try and talk about, I'm very happy to cover if I can, and if I know something about it especially, I'll talk about it. This request came in from a man by the name of Martin, who sent me an email. And please, anybody, if you want to request, please do. And I think it's because a few weeks ago we did the Science of Human Evolution. And I spoke about Papua New Guinea, actually. And anybody who wants to see that one will look back. And all about the Papua New Guineans and, you know, certain genes persisting in that population for altitude. And Martin said, can you do a more general one on the science of evolution? So I thought I would, of human evolution. And I'm very happy to, Martin. This is the science of human evolution too, if you like. And he what he really was asking me was, are we still evolving? That's the question. And guess what? We are. Now, for a long time, scientists thought we'd stopped evolving because we got so advanced, you know, and we'd reached our peak, as it were. But that's never the case. Evolution is always acting on species, sometimes in subtle ways. So, for example, alligators and crocodiles, they haven't changed much over millions of years because they're pretty robust. And remember, the reason why you see evolution is there's variation in the population. We're all slightly different. And if conditions change, you may have the right set of genes to survive. Survival of the fittest, of course, being Darwin's concept, although we never use that phrase. Or natural selection was the way he described it. And then you will persist and the other guy won't. And then your genes pass on. And this is seen in evolution. That's the way to think of it. So if you're in a very stable situation and you haven't got too many predators or whatever it might be, maybe you won't be evolving as fast as a species. And certainly there's some evidence of that for us humans. We probably have slowed down a bit. But there is evidence also of that we are changing in terms of evolutionary sort of arrangements in our genetic makeup. And remember, we are evolved from the first cell that arose on Earth. The first cell arose about 4 billion years ago, a single-celled organism. It's called LUCA, by the way. Now, LUCA stands for our last universal common ancestor. All life on Earth is descended from this single cell, remember? And all that happened was evolution kicked in and certain, you know, species begin to develop given different prevailing conditions. We're evolved from LUCA, like all life on Earth. We went through a phase of being eyeless fish, I'll have you know. And then the eyeless fish began to evolve further. Tiny mammals among the dinosaurs, we're descended from one of them. Finally, you get to us. So the story of life on Earth is all about evolution, and finally you reach us. But are we still evolving? Now, this is about selection and selective pressure. And remember, our environment has changed a lot. Using technology, we have killed off many germs that kill us, and certainly we have ways of treating infectious diseases. So that's no longer a major selective pressure. Secondly, we don't have as many predators, and that was a selective pressure on us as well. Less famine is happening as well, and that was a pressure on our species. And less wars, although it mightn't seem that way, less aggression. And that means these selective pressures have kind of gone to a large extent as a way to select out certain variants. But remember, sexual selection is still very evident. Now, what is that? Well, that might mean, for example, mate preference. And for instance, if a female prefers a certain trait in a male, she will look for males with that trait, and that will pass on to the next generation. And the guy without that trait may not be able to pass his genes on. So sexual selection is still a feature of our species, of course, as we know. But we are living in very, you might say, unnatural environments. We're using technology. We're stuck behind our desks on our computer screens. That will have a selective pressure on our species as well, remember. So we do think there are these pressures there that might result in selection of certain traits. And then we'll see these traits begin to dominate. The trouble is the time scales are challenging. It took 4 billion years of time to go from a single cell to us, remember. That's a very long time. All these generations, you know, are being born, you know, and then there's selection happening. So it takes a long time for these things to kick in. But some of these latest things that we've evolved are relatively recent, as I will explain. Now, what's the basis for variation? Well, an offspring, right, that's born will have 70 genetic differences from its parents from the get-go. And those differences are in the sperm or egg. There's slight changes there. There could be chemical modifications. There can be mutations. So in other words, already when a baby is born, it's slightly different from its parents. And then, of course, its sibling will also be slightly different and will be different from that baby simply because of spontaneous differences. There's also errors as the DNA gets copied. So variation is built into DNA replication, basically, and the nature of DNA. And then you can see now how certain things will get selected out based on that difference. It obviously is important. If we were all clones of each other, a single infection could wipe out the entire species. So therefore, variation is built in, I guess, to allow species to continue. But again, it's just natural. It's not designed in any way. Of course, intelligent design was the great phrase that was used. But remember, there's variation between us, and those variants begin to get selected out. And it's about survival of the fittest. And that survival can be based on you having the right gene set for the circumstances or the sexual selection, selecting out certain traits, the two main ways that we see evolution in action. Now, let me give you some examples, Martin, of recent evolution. 2,000 years ago, in Madagascar, people carrying the Duffy null allele, it's a specific gene variant of a thing called Duffy, they were surviving malaria. And the ones without Duffy null allele weren't. Now, it could have been a single individual, or it could have been a family that were all carrying this Duffy null allele, and they go on to spread that gene through the population. And now many people in Madagascar are carrying the Duffy null allele because they can survive malaria. There's an obvious one. A second big one is lactose. Now, we love this one because this is one of the ones that was really studied in great detail. Now, we as babies drink milk, but it turns out that many Homo sapiens cannot digest lactose as they become adults. You need an enzyme called lactase to digest lactose in milk. Now, lactose is the main sugar in milk. So when you drink milk and it's sweet, you're tasting lactose, and your body burns the lactose, especially babies, as a fuel source. But it was known that many adults lose that ability to burn lactose, which, now why that would be lost, of course, the enzyme gets turned off. We don't know why people lose it. But guess what? About 3,000 years ago, especially in Europe, lactase comes back. Now, what does that mean? There must have been humans who could still burn lactose into adulthood. And that must have given them a survival advantage over the ones that couldn't. And then there are populations, first of all, in Europe, they spotted this, but it's not just Europeans. Certain Asians have lactase as well. The enzyme lactase is the one that breaks down the lactose. Now, the assumption there was that the ability to burn lactose into adulthood could give you a survival advantage because you can use the nutrients in milk more effectively, and therefore you might be more likely to survive. And especially in a famine situation, say, when the crops are dying off, if we're still drinking milk, of course the trouble is the animals might die off because the crop's failing, but still, if you can drink milk into adulthood and burn the lactose and someone else can't, you might survive malnutrition and that lactase gene passes on. Guess what? Headline news, that's not true. Now again, science is a process, never forget that. Scientists are always trying to find things out, and they often make stuff that contradicts previous stuff and finally get to the truth. And even though that seemed to be an obvious thing, they don't think it's because of nutrition. They think it's because if you have lactase and if you can burn lactose, you're more likely to survive infections that cause diarrhea. Now imagine that for a minute. If you can't metabolize lactose, it builds up in your gut, begins to irritate the gut, and if you have bad diarrhea, then that gets much more severe, right? Whereas if you can burn the lactose and you get infected, your diarrhea is less severe and you're more likely to survive. So the ability to burn lactose could turn out to be to do with things like infections. And that's a really, it turns out that even before 3,000 years ago when lactase was there, bugs in your gut can burn lactose anyway. So people were drinking milk before that and getting some kind of benefit from it. But the arrival of lactase would allow you to survive sort of infections is one idea here, and that's why it persists. And very interesting how the textbooks are slightly rewritten on this now. Having lactase allows you to survive diarrhea is the idea, rather than end up giving you extra nutrients, and therefore we've rewritten our understanding of why lactase then emerges. Now another one, get ready Martin, there's more of them coming. The biobank in the UK, get this, the UK has gathered 500,000 DNA samples from people, right? In other words, 500,000 people, rather, have had their DNA sequenced. Isn't that incredible? This is a massive resource for genetics. And they looked at these some of these samples, older people, people living into their 80s, and wondered, what genes are they missing? Right? It was kind of an inverse question. In other words, if older people are missing certain genes, That might be the reason why they're living into the age of 80, 85. And lo and behold, they're missing a gene that increases risk of Alzheimer's. And that just shows, you know, you can imagine if that gene transmits, because obviously not having Alzheimer's would give you a survival advantage. You're more likely to survive maybe and procreate and so on if you're a man. We're talking about here, of course. So therefore, they found a gene missing in these older people. And eventually, maybe that will persist in the population through survival, you know, and through passing it on. And therefore, maybe Alzheimer's might become a thing of the past. And wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? They also were missing a gene to do with heavy smoking. Now, we know heavy smoking is a massive risk factor for early death. It turns out these people were missing a gene that would turn the stuff in smoke into a toxic chemical, if you can follow that. In other words, when you smoke, you're taking in all these pollutants, I suppose. Your body can make those into a more toxic form, and that could be damaging. These people were missing that form, and therefore were surviving longer, not just from smoking, other pollutants in the environment. So again, there's an example that could persist and carry on, and that would be evidence of evolution in that regard, I guess. And then two more examples for you. A gene called caspase 12, which I work on in my lab. Now, caspase 12 is part of the immune response. If it's overactive, it can kill you, because it makes the immune system go into overdrive. If in people who are having an inactive form of that, a less active form of caspase 11, were 8 times less likely to die of a thing called sepsis. Now, again, you can imagine if sepsis runs riot through our population, the ones who are missing caspase 12 will survive and will pass on that feature into the next generation. A second example is HIV. There's a gene called CCR5. If you carry a variant in that, you resist HIV. So again, you can see how that would begin to persist in a population. And again, that would be a type of evolution, because the species is evolving into a state where it can resist HIV and also resist sepsis and septic shock. And this is happening. We can see these genes beginning to persist and begin to get selected in certain populations. Again, evidence of evolution in action in humans. And then the last thing that's really intriguing, I think, is, guess what? This is partly predictive. It turns out we're getting taller, and there's good evidence for this. And it's not just about nutrition. There are genetic variants that will allow people to be slightly taller than someone else. And guess what? That could be a sexual selection thing. There's evidence that in the human species, females prefer taller males. And you can see now how those genes would pass on to the next generation. Not all females prefer tall males, of course. You can't beat diversity, can you? But overall, there's a leaning towards that. So we're getting slightly taller, it turns out. Secondly, our skeletons are getting more flimsy. There's evidence for this. Now, why would that be? Well, the reason for that is, back in the Stone Age, you needed a strong skeleton because you were fighting other people, you know, and a strong bones was beneficial, and there was more injuries happening. That's gone as a selective pressure, so you don't need to be selecting out strong bones. And as we sit at our desks, you don't need to have strong bones, and your body is putting a huge amount of effort into making those dense bones. Someone who's using that in a different way to make, say, some other feature of your body, maybe making your brain more effective, that could be selected out. And therefore, the people who are making less strong bones then begin to survive more. And there's evidence for that. There's also evidence of decreasing muscle strength. Again, because you don't need strong muscles anymore, and it takes a lot of effort to build a strong muscle. And then we're getting less aggressive. And that's a really good one, isn't it? There's evidence that aggression, even though this seems hard to believe, but there's evidence of aggression going down. We're becoming more tolerant. And the reason for this is predicted to be because we're meeting more people than ever before. Now, in the Stone Age or whatever, you didn't meet that many people, and you had to, you know, you could easily sort of get violence towards them if you did meet strangers. But now that we're meeting so many people online, socially and all the rest of it, to be tolerant and understanding could give you an advantage. You can build teams better. You can, you know, you can pass that on then to the next generation. And again, it could be a sexual selection thing, that the females prefer the males who are less aggressive and less, you know, brawny, shall we say. You know, that could be an advantage. And again, that could get selected out as a result. So if you fast forward, and this is the kind of punchline, Martin, you know, if I fast forward, what, 1,000 years from now, and we look at what Homo sapiens is like then, we will look quite different. We're going to be a bit taller, less muscle mass, more flimsy skeletons, and an immune system that's built to fight infections more and more, you know, and maybe resisting Alzheimer's, maybe having various traits that allow us to have survived in this period, and we will have evolved. Not into a different species, but there will be evidence of Homo sapiens evolving. And let's face it, that future sounds good to me. if we become more tolerant of each other and less aggressive, that's got to be a good thing. So maybe through evolution, we'd eventually become the kind of people we really want to be. You never know. So as ever, thanks for listening. That's The Science of Human Evolution 2. And my podcast is a News Talk production, available for download every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.